Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. This Saturday night, comedian Eddie Izzard will bring his brilliant and unique form of stand-up comedy to the stage at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, New York. He's performing at 6 p.m. and 9 p.m., though there are only tickets available for the 6 p.m. show. Comedian, dramatic actor of stage and screen, activist, transvestite, marathon runner. Any one descriptor, or even a bundle of them applied to Izzard, would fail to summarize his career or the man himself. But of course, we're here to try. I spoke with Eddie Izzard yesterday and began by asking him when he began performing.
God, when I began performing? Well, I wanted to be an actor when I was 7. I made someone laugh in a show that I was put into with everyone else in the class when I was 12. And then I sort of dumped acting and went into comedy because I thought I shouldn't be doing drama. And then I thought I'd leave at 18. I went to university and the Edinburgh Festival over in Scotland, a big international festival. I thought I'd take off there. That was about 19, and then nothing happened until I was 30. And I went through street performing and sketch comedy, and stand-up was my third comedy medium, and that took off. And at that time, I started doing drama at the same time with a separate agent, and now I'm playing a serial killer in the new NBC series Hannibal, and about to do a world tour of comedy. So it's quite a nice place now. Now I'm doing drama and surreal comedy at the same time but separately.
Right. And you, of course, and understandably oversimplify, you were working, developing a style the entire time for your whole life, basically.
Well, I was developing my comedy style, you mean?
Figuring out what you would do.
Well, only accidentally. I mean, I think I would have rather... At the time, I mean, I know this doesn't happen now, but I think at the time I thought that you have a career that starts when you're, I don't know, 18, 16, some child actors, Jodie Foster, 10, 12, and then you're there, and then you're just cruising along, and then you do it. I now find that you should always be changing, always be improving, and never think you've got it right. So accidentally, probably the best thing for me was the fact that it took such a long time to start. And I think I'm a naturally slow starter. I think some people, I don't know if I'm naturally good at anything. I think I'm good at getting to be good at things if I want to be. And maybe a lot of us humans are. Maybe that is a trait. Maybe a lot of us, if we really want to do something, we can develop a good part of us, or we can develop an ability to do it, even if we don't seem to have the natural instincts in there, if you want it hard enough. It's determination seems to be more important than anything else. I've seen a lot of talented people fall by the wayside in the creative medium. People I thought, oh yeah, they've got it, and they just don't apply it, and then they give up.
You push yourself very hard in lots of different directions, like you've just said. You kept pushing and pushing and learning to do your comedy, but you also not only do it in your native tongue of English, but you've done stand-up in French and German a few years ago.
I've got to adjust. I'm fully doing it in French, because that sounds like I'm dabbling. In fact, I'm now touring. I'm doing the first tour of France from the 8th of March. First tour of France that any English speaker, I believe, has ever done. 2 gigs in Nice, 2 gigs in Lyon, and then 1 in the Olympia in Paris, which is a big 1,800-seater very famous Parisian venue. So I'm now touring in French. The German I haven't done yet. I am playing Berlin this year, but in English, in bizarrely in a 1,700-seater Friedrichstrasse in Berlin, which is a massive place. But I will learn German. I did 2 years of German. So I just haven't done it yet. I've been promising them for 10 years that I would do it. So I will do German by next year and Spanish by next year. And then I want to do Russian and Arabic as well.
What is it about trying it in different languages? Why do you want to pursue that?
I'm not trying it in different languages. I'm doing it.
Right, of course.
That's
sorry.
The thing. This isn't a dabble. And it's not that it's a challenge, even though it is a challenge. The fact that people are completely gobsmacked that I've done it, including myself, I think that does help, because I do like that, because it does seem that it's not on anyone's list. There's no list that says you've got to do stand-up and you've got to go and tour, and then if you play Madison Square Garden, Hollywood Bowl and Wembley, and then you go and learn it in French. It's just the French bit's not on anyone's list. Mm-hmm. But it is part of my politics. I am intending to run for mayor of London in 2020. doing an Al Franken, and I feel the melting pot is part of my worldview. I think the melting pot could save the world if people are traveling more and more and learning lots of different languages. I don't know if that's ever going to increase, because English is becoming, it is such an easy language to do it on a basic level, that it does seem to have taken over the world. I don't think Mandarin Chinese is going to take over. Spanish might be English and Spanish in the end. But anyway, you know, I want to put my money where my mouth is. So if French people are doing stuff in English and German people are doing it in English, and English people should be doing it in French and German and Spanish, I just think that's healthy for the world. It fights against racism.
How did you develop that worldview? When did it occur to you that this was something you wanted to push and demonstrate?
Well, I think it naturally through my dad and my mum when she was alive. I think we're quite a positive, liberal family, a progressive family. Dad used to say, as long as you're happy, which sounded kind of simple to me, but it is quite, you know, a sensible attitude. I decided I didn't like fascists. I never have this extremist. The extremist is what I hate, but tends to be fascist all the time. So I thought I liked going in Europe, and they started doing gigs in English in Paris, and I just thought, so if I do them in French in Paris, then that would be a positive sign that things can change. It is a great sign, I think. And I know that other people looking and saying, well, why can't I do, if it's not in French, why don't I do it in English, if they're German or whatever? And this is happening. There are German comics now playing. Michael Mittermeier, big German stand-up comedian, is playing London in English. And it's just, it means we're in the third millennium. It means World War II has passed and we've moved on into another place, which is great. And sometimes you need those visual, or those, it's not really a visual thing, something striking to happen. So I just think it's good. And no one believes it as well. And no one acts, not many people report that I'm doing it. So I just, I keep telling everyone.
Because
I think it's a great thing.
And you are seriously going to run for mayor of London?
Yeah, 2020.
Your mother passed away when you were young. Is that early loss of her something you think has had an impact on your entire life and your daily life still?
Yes, I do. There's a documentary called Believe, which sort of covers my life, and in it I explain what I think, that basically I started performing, wanting to perform after Mum died. That was for her affection was replaced by the potential affection of an audience if they liked what you were doing. It seems to me that's what I've been doing since the age of 7. Because I do remember a particular time where I said, right, I'm going to do that performing. And I remember it being 7 years old.
I've seen the documentary, and that is a striking moment. It seems as though on camera you're realizing it for the first time.
The one that you're talking about there towards the end of the film, which is when I say, and it is the first time I realized it, and I just happened to be there. It's quite an odd moment because I didn't know. It was like an out-of-body moment. But anyway, basically, I said, and I think this is essentially true, that it's the number of things I'm doing that, you know, doing, because I have run 43 marathons in 51 days. I am going to politics in 2020. I'm going to do gigs all around the world, and there's many. This is the most extensive comedy tour ever. I'm playing Kathmandu this year, as well as Moscow and Berlin and Istanbul. And I think I'm doing, I said, I think I'm doing all these things. Maybe if I do enough things, maybe Mum would come back. And it was such an odd idea because I'd never really had that idea. And it's kind of an outlandish idea. I kind of look at it now and think, that is an odd idea, but it suddenly struck me that psychologically, I think that was what was underneath what I'm doing. Even though I know that I don't think she will come back.
You just mentioned that you ran 43 marathons in 51 days for Sport Relief, which I followed you on Twitter as you did that.
All right.
I cannot, even having followed you, obviously that's not the same. Following on Twitter is not the same as actually running anywhere. But I can't imagine having done that. Did that change anything in your life? Did you realize anything on that exhaustive running tour?
Yes, that changed a load of things, actually. It changed It might be the biggest change. People react to me differently. People come up to me even now and say, well done on those marathons. I got very involved back with sports. I was involved with sports when I was a kid up the age of 13. Then it all went away. Mm-hmm. And I went to schools that didn't play football, soccer. And I was tried to be very involved with the Olympics last year and very positive about it. And I'm doing more marathon running. I've got into doing triathlons. And even people from the armed forces talk to me in a way as if I've done something that could... It's not the same as being in the armed forces, but it's definitely... It's got a distinct endurance quality about it.
Of course.
Running 43 marathons. So people just started chatting to me and talking to me about it. And it's I'm very pleased to have done it, and I'll continue to do more.
When did you realize, because another aspect of your life, of course, is that you're a transvestite. When did you realize that?
Yeah. I realized that when I was four, either four or five, somewhere around the 4 or 5 mark. I don't think it has anything to do with my mother. People have claimed that it has, but that doesn't make any sense. I think all alternative sexualities are genetic, and they're given to you at birth in your genetic genome, which I'm just getting tested actually at the moment, so I'm sure it's going to be somewhere in there. And I just decided to come out when I was 23, and I'm a straight transvestite, which I liken to action transvestite or executive transvestite. That's how I explain what I'm about. Yeah, anyway, so it's
well, no, you speak, I mean, you speak that to that extensively in stand-up, so people can check out your specials and sort of understand where you're coming from.
Did you say I talk about it extensively in the specials? I don't think I talk about extensive. I think I do talk about it, and I do wear makeup or I don't wear makeup. I actually try, and some people think, oh, all your comedy is transvestite comedy then.
Oh, no, you know, that's not what
I'm... I'm basically doing Monty Python as stand-up. That's mm-hmm. what I feel I'm doing. But I do refer to it sometimes more and sometimes less. In more recent shows, hardly at all. But I remember some people thought, oh, you just talk about makeup? Is that all your jokes, or it's just about makeup? It is. I talk about Romans and Greeks and cats with guns and fish that are on fire and space aliens and whether there's a god or not and all this kind of stuff. So, yes, but it's a distinct part of my life because it's sort of there. But I came out when I was 23, which is gone. 28 years ago. So a long time out now.
I didn't mean that to imply that your stand-up is only about that. I just meant I wasn't trying to lead you into doing part of your act that explains
it. All right.
A lot of your stand-up, as you've just sort of mentioned, is about religion and history, to overgeneralize again.
Yeah.
Have you always been interested in those topics?
Religion, less so. History, yes. I liked it at school. I couldn't write the essays. They always said, write these essays usually on why the First World War started, which you seem to get over and over again, or President Roosevelt's domestic policy in the first 100 days, stuff like that. And religion, I mean, I went to a school where I had to, for 12 years, go to the school chapel. It was a boarding school, it was school chapel or church or whatever you call it. And so I had it sort of, not indoctrinated, but definitely put there, and you had to do lessons in it and look through the New Testament. It's all New Testament stuff. And then I just started questioning it later on, and now I decided I don't believe in a God. Yeah, so I discussed it. Well, I put forward my point of view on that subject.
You have also, in non-stand-up but as an actor, you've performed on screen, of course, television and film, and you've done plays at the West End and on Broadway. Do you prefer, when acting, one medium to the other?
I think the medium I love the most is film. Nothing better than being in a big film. I mean, at the moment I'm in Toronto shooting the TV series for NBC, Hannibal Lecter series, before, which is set in the time zone before Silence of the Lambs takes place. And so this is great. So it's like we're doing a film here, but we're doing film drama, and TV film drama is in a very good place at this time in history.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So it's great to be a part of that. I think I love film more, I would say, but the bridge between film drama, television drama, and film drama is almost completely level. People are just walking backwards and forwards. So Yeah, that is the one I love. I mean, if I had to choose between that and comedy, it's quite weird. I always wanted to do drama, and once I got comedy going, I wanted to do comedy as well. And that's what drives a lot of agents up the wall. They can't, you know, you should be a comedy person or you're a drama person. I kind of want to do both.
Do you have any, in the entertainment industry, people you look up to who have managed to straddle that line, who have paved the way to do both?
I would say Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he did a very fine President Roosevelt, Franklin D. Roosevelt, in the film that he recently did, that the name just walked out of my head. Hyde Park on the Hudson, which didn't seem to get the nominations and that I expected it to. But I thought he did a very fine piece of work there. And he has traveled from a very funny guy who I first discovered on Meatballs,
mm-hmm.
the film Meatballs, which was quite a broad comedy thing, but he had this such an amazing thing going on with him, and to get all the way there to FDR is quite a journey. So he is my best example of done it. And you have to kind of kill your comedy audience generally. If people are expecting you to come on and do comedy, it's quite a lot of baggage to try and do a dramatic role, because people go, well, hang on, aren't you going to be funny here? I'm trying to keep the comedy going at the same time. So, but I just think Bill Murray is the best example of this that I can think of. There might be one or two others. Robbie Coltrane in Britain came from the world of comedy and moved into the world of drama. But yeah, I do like Bill Murray's choices as well.
Eddie Izzard, it is incredibly exciting that you'll be in the Hudson Valley. I can't wait to see you at the Bardavon on Saturday. And thank you very much for taking time out of your day today to speak with me.
No problem. Very good to talk to you.
Eddie Izzard will be at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, New York this Saturday, February 16th. For ticket information, visit bardavon.org or call their box office, 845-339-6088. That's bardavon.org, bardavon.org, or the box office phone number again, 845-339-6088. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.